Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Hello and welcome to On the Bench, an impromptu podcast for myself, Brendan Sinone, and my coworker, friend.
What other descriptor are you going to use for me?
I was trying to blur the line of appropriate and inappropriate.
It's Chris. Chrisney, that's who's here with you. Just let the people know.
So we came to Charlotte for the ACC kickoff, not planning to do a podcast, but you know what? My boy said, hey, I got some energy. I want a pod right now.
For the record, before we left town, I said, should we pod there? And you're like, nah.
Yeah, I didn't want to pack the microphone because it doesn't do very well in travel. It's a big wonky microphone. So anyways, I will apologize once and get it over with. Sorry for the crappy audio. We are using a backup microphone here.
It's like a retro show for us, if we're being honest. Our audio used to always be bad.
Apologizing.
I mean, I sound like I was in space.
All right, so the ACC kickoff was pretty productive here, Chris. We had a fun time, and we also have a quarterback commitment that we'll probably talk about here as well. But let's start off with the scene setter, the ACC kickoff. You wrote a really good column about what you observed. FSU was front and center at the beginning of the day, but really not the headline of the day, which is not what FSU is used to.
Yeah, so for people that aren't familiar with it, it's a two-day event. Day one is the Coastal Division this year. Day two, which was today, is the Atlantic Division, obviously, including FSU. Yesterday, Commissioner Jim Phillips led off the day, and then they went into the schools. And all the schools do kind of the same thing. They speak on a main stage podium with everybody collected in a big ballroom. Then they go and do what they call breakout interviews, breakaway interviews, which is a smaller room, tables. We all kind of wrap around the tables and talk to them there. And then obviously they go around and speak to Radio Row. They speak to some of the national outlets, ESPN, Athletic, CBS Sports. There's some others that are collected here. They kind of have their own moments with them. And that's a mix of print, television, all of that stuff. So, for example, FSU basically was hitting the stage around 9:45 a.m. this morning, if I remember correctly. And they wrap up around 3:30 p.m. with a 30-minute lunch in the middle there. So that kind of gives you an idea of their regular day. Nice thing done by FSU, and hat tip to Derek Satterfield, SID there, as well as Coach Norvell and the three young men who came with him. They did a little bit for the local media before they hit that main stage. There was about a dozen or so of us collected here that came up from Tallahassee and other areas nearby. And, you know, they gave us some great time, which is great. Well appreciated. Nice gesture.
You're Jesus. A jester.
Yeah. Something that...
Three, two, one.
Something that we just haven't had in past years. So, much appreciated. Then, of course, they head in the big ballroom, hit the stage. Coach Norvell opens up, nails it with a great opening statement about Coach Bowden. Obviously, everybody knows the news that came down with Coach Bowden on Wednesday. Thoughts and prayers with him, his wife, Ann, his children, and the entire camp of the Bowden family. You know, tough to hear about the great legendary coach, 91-year-old man. But Coach Norvell speaks on him. Obviously sharing thoughts and prayers, but also kind of nails it with a statement about just what Coach Bowden means to Florida State, who he is, what he is, and, you know, the job that Mike Norvell has largely exists and is thought of the way it's thought of because of Bobby Bowden. So he speaks for, what, 10 to 15 minutes, I think Coach was up there. Then we got Jermaine Johnson, followed by Mackenzie Milton, followed by Jordan Travis. They all spoke, wrapped up there, hit the breakaway interviews. We go in that room. You know, I've done, I don't know, it's probably eight or so kickoffs at this point in my life. Missed a couple over the years, but not a ton. The breakaway interviews sometimes are a complete and utter circus. There's 50 people around a small table. You can't get up there. Same questions asked 17 times. Some people are asking, you know, do you like pie or ice cream? I mean, it's just craziness. That was not the issue today. Tables were relatively thinner. I think the biggest crowd I ever saw at one point was maybe about 15 people around Coach Norvell or Milton. They had the two biggest crowds out of four guys for FSU. But it was enjoyable because you could have good discussions. You could actually have kind of a lengthy, you know, you could follow up a question with another question if the conversation took you there, continue the conversation. That's nice. as someone who enjoys having those kind of things when you're trying to report, it's appreciated. It's much better than getting one in and then fighting to the death to get a follow-up.
I'm sorry. You go ahead.
So they spoke with us there. It was very good. They leave there. I believe they had their lunch at that point. And then they mostly hit Radio Row, ACC Network, and the national outlets that I referenced earlier. It was, I think the word we used to describe it was kind of mundane. Mm-hmm. And completely appreciated by me, and I think you, that it was mundane. There was no overreaching and saying, we're going 12-0 type of comments. There was nothing that's going to cause national headlines for all the wrong reasons or unnecessary reasons. It was very much about what last year was, a disjointed, odd, very unique year, difficult year one for any coach in the country, definitely for a coach that took over a program that had kind of nosedived in prior years. And then it turned to a lot of new faces, you know, three guys here, all of which are transfers into the program, two of which are transfers since January, talking about sort of why those kind of guys are in this program and what this program is trying to do, and the 1% better every day, building blocks, slowly but surely, trying to be a better locker room, a better team. And it was just good. I kind of walked away, and my column very much centered on that. I appreciated that it was sort of calm, and FSU wasn't the center of attention in a three-ring circus. It was very much basically about football. Some of those national topics like name, image, likeness, vaccinations, thresholds, college football playoff expansion, those kind of things were hit on.
Mike was asked about Dabo Swinney right away. Yeah, he did not take the bait.
But let's be honest, that question, I believe, was asked by a member of Clemson Media, and it was gotcha journalism, which is what some people do.
He was asked, like, have you guys talked about it, or have you hashed it out? He's like, there's nothing to talk about.
There's years where there are 20 to 30 minutes of that kind of BS. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case today, which mm-hmm. I enjoyed.
Remember 2014 in Pinehurst? Was the Jimbo Fisher reckoning, basically?
Yeah, and that was what, Roberto?
Right. No, that was 2015. That was 15. 2014 would have been the year after Jameis. It was that may have been 15 after the Dalvin Cook and DeAndre Johnson offseason.
But I'm trying to remember what players did he take with him, is what I was trying to remember.
If it was 2015, it would have been Jalen and Roberto. Okay. It may have been there then.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there were plenty of instances, 13, 14, 15, but especially 14, 15, because 13 still kind of snuck up on people at this point of the year. But 14, 15, yeah, there were a ton of instances where it just was kind of a bloodbath. You know, it felt like Jimbo would either get white-knuckled talking about stuff, or he'd kind of feel like he was in front of a firing squad trying to answer questions. Mm-hmm. And it was just nuts. And that's not enjoyable. That's not the setting I'm here for. I'm not here for that kind of stuff. And then, of course, we had Willie, where those, and this was a consistent theme with Willie during year one, was a building of expectations that obviously created a balloon that quickly popped. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have that today. I don't think I heard a single prediction of scheduled results by anybody involved in the FSU party. Much appreciated.
And that was a good comment. I'm trying to remember who it was on the message board. I wrote a story about the newcomers kind of being the face of the program, and Jermaine Johnson, Mackenzie Milton being guys you said like haven't been here for a very long period of time, yet they are being given the opportunity to be on the big stage, which I think tells a lot about what Mike Norvell thinks of those guys and the core values of his program. Is basically, if you're proving capable of doing something, I will put you in a position to succeed or to keep maximizing your potential. But someone said that Jermaine Johnson's comments sounded a lot like Mike Norvell's in the comment section. And I think today was a good microcosm of that, with all three of the guys all being very buttoned up, very thoughtful, not deviating from the script at all. And
yeah, that's but it wasn't super canned.
No,
it wasn't. I thought Jermaine was excellent.
He was. He was the best of the day, right?
Yeah, I thought Jermaine this morning when we got him first thing was fantastic, and he continued that in the breakout room. McKenzie's good. McKenzie's been at this since 2016, so he's a grizzled veteran.
He's a quarterback. He's not going to say something to get himself
and
in trouble.
And he's a dude running Dreamfield, name, image, likeness. He's dancing in a lot of pools, and he gets how to handle it. Mm-hmm. He's very businesslike, and he does a very, very good job of that. He had one little quip about the quarterback at Alabama and the name, image, likeness number that's been thrown around that was kind of humorous. But that was like the closest thing we came to one of those moments. And he didn't mean anything negative by it. He actually praised the young man. So you heard comes from a good family. And it's Alabama, obviously. He's supposed to be very good, and they're obviously a very good program. And then Jordan Travis was good. He was kind of introspective. And Jordan will admittedly tell you, he's not super comfortable with being the speaker. He's not that way with his teammates. He's not that way with media. It's not his thing. Mm-hmm. He's worked really hard to be better at it with his teammates and with media. And he certainly is better at it. And I thought he was excellent because Jordan, he know, I think Jordan understands that the view of him is he's the underdog.
Yeah, and that quarterback battle. I think that came across.
But he's completely comfortable, and it's clear as day that those two young men, him and Mackenzie Milton, like each other and kind of appreciate that they push each other.
Yeah. Well, let's dissect some of the different storylines that came out of talking to each person. Let's start with Jermaine Johnson, beginning with his attire, his dress, which you noted was your favorite of the three.
Yeah, if there was a drip-off contest, that man would have won it. I almost wrote it in the column, but I saved it for the airwaves. Studded shoes, solid suit, clean cut on the top of the head. He looked great. He nailed it. He looked like a dude getting ready to go up on stage and shake Goodell's hand. I mean, he nailed it. If we're giving out 1 to 10 ranking, he's a 10. I mean, he fantastic today.
And Milton was feeling himself, too, with the haircut. He was proud of what he put
together. He enjoyed it. He had a little fun with it. The shoes definitely got a lot of attention. You can see him on the FSU football Twitter, in fact. Jermaine was great. I mean, he talked about he's had a weird journey. He was arguably the best player in Minnesota coming out of high school. Has to go to Independence for junior college. Is on last chance U because of that. That's because of grades. He admittedly said that. He goes from there to Georgia. He kind of has to wait his turn and never gets to that Georgia. But, you know, Dan Lanning, Mike Norvell relationship plays somewhat of a role in him ending up at FSU. Mm-hmm. You know, and him, Milton, they both had similar statements of they kind of came to FSU because they trusted Norvell. They believed in what he was saying, and you know, they feel like that's been true for 7 months now since they arrived. And he's really happy at FSU, and he's one of these guys who I felt like he commands some leadership role. Like, he's very comfortable with that, but he doesn't feel like I don't know how to best describe it. I'm struggling. But he's not someone who feels like he... It feels authentic, I guess, is the best way of describing it. He's very comfortable being a leader, but at the same time, he doesn't think he has to be the center of attention for that defense.
And he doesn't say things to create shock, or I think it's pretty authentic.
But he's extremely confident in his ability.
Very much so. You saw that in the spring. Like, he was jawing with the offensive line consistently, and it didn't feel manufactured or forced. He was trying to, like, the offensive lineman, you can tell they're trying to hype themselves up and build confidence for themselves.
Like, most guys in football develop a chip on their shoulder. For whatever reason, it's just something they do. Mm-hmm. Jordan Travis clearly has one. You know, he's kind of doubted. Can he throw the ball used to be the narrative. We talked plenty about that ourselves. Mackenzie Milton, chip on the shoulder. I don't know if it's so much a chip, but obviously coming back from the injury, there's all the question marks of coming back from injury. I think with Jermaine Johnson, he thinks he is good enough where he could have easily played at Georgia more than he played, and he didn't. And now he's out to prove that at a school that so desperately needs a valuable pass rush.
My favorite part from him was in the morning session with the local media, and someone asked him a question and referred to Mike Norvell as Mike, and he responded as he's like, well, yeah, Mike. He's like, oh, I mean, Coach Norvell, he almost got me there. Had a little laugh after the Coach Prime, Dion, Nick Saban debacle.
Yeah. I like Jermaine. I thought Jermaine came off extremely well today. He's been good in every interview we've had with him since he arrived at FSU. But in person, he was unbelievable. And boy, let me tell you, it was nice to have in-person interviews again.
We're working back towards that. All right, so let's talk about then Jordan Travis. Like you said, Chris, introspective. Honestly, the best story of the day, the one I'm looking forward to writing tomorrow, probably comes from him. And that's Jordan fully admitting two or three pretty interesting things that we had kind of heard. One was that he was almost contemplating not playing football after the end of the Willie Taggart era and before this past season. He had lost his confidence. He said fully, I didn't even know if I would doubt that I could throw the ball more than 5 yards downfield. It's like you hear things, you see things. And he fully admitted that he was a fairly broken player heading into this season. And obviously, Mike Norvell and Kenny Dillingham worked really hard to remedy that for him. So I thought that was really interesting, Chris. Like, that he was that introspective and honest about where he was, and it's remarkable to see how far he's come.
Yeah, and he's 7 to 10 pounds heavier these days than he was at this point last year. Durability, obviously, a bit of a concern with him, but you know, most would expect with a little extra weight it comes along. He clearly is more confident in his ability. We noticed in spring how much he had shown a sign of improvement. It was funny, he kind of talked about how out of high school, he wasn't thought of as a runner. He's become. He was still thought of more as a passer. So he still clearly wants to prove he is a quality passer and do it on a consistent basis. And I think he certainly worked hard in that regard under Kenny and Mike Norvell, Coach Dillingham and Mike Norvell, mm-hmm. and Coach Norvell. God, you got me saying Coach and Mike now. I'm scared. I think Mike Dion got us all shook.
Sometimes there's an example of life where both parties are kind of in the wrong, and I think Dion was...
I'm not watching. It was swack. I mean, like, I can't end up watching swack media day stuff.
But the reporter played into it a little bit, and
The other thing about Jordan is, obviously, younger brother of a high-level athlete who came through FSU and Devin Travis, mm-hmm. who now works in minor league baseball and had obviously played major league baseball. So there's that he can lean on, and he certainly leans on Devin. The two of them are close. They talk frequently. It's clear as day that Devin is one of those pillars for him as a young man that he, when he needs somebody, that's who he goes to. Good, bad, ugly, doesn't matter what it is, that's the guy he goes to. The other thing with Jordan is he's very smart. He's a Seminole scholar, which should always be a hat tip, but he is a really smart kid. And he talked today about how his parents emphasize education coming up as a student athlete, and that's continued, and that's true. And I think that helps him a great deal because he tries to definitely block out outside noise. He's a guy that definitely tries to worry about himself and how he can improve. But it's abundantly clear that Milton coming in is obviously a challenge to him, mm-hmm. but they've worked well off of each other, and they like each other. There's a natural chemistry between the two for two guys that have really only been around each other for 6 to 7 months now that is a positive. And I think it's elevated that quarterback room and probably helps that offense as a whole that they have two guys and it's not cutthroat. I mean, obviously, they both want to start. Mm-hmm. Every quarterback under the sun in college football usually wants to start. Nobody wants to be a clipboard holder. But I think, first and foremost, both are going to play. Mm-hmm. I don't think you bring them both to ACC kickoff if you don't believe they're not both going to play.
Jordan said as much. He's confident they'll both play.
I think Mike Norvell on Brian McFadden's podcast, BMAC, does a great job. I think he kind of...
Cover all things. You guys check it out, CBS podcast.
He referred to two quarterbacks being comfortable with that and all that. I mean, the groundwork for that being a real thing this year has clearly been laid. Mm-hmm.
He's been asked about it a ton, to be fair, and he hasn't come out and directly said we're going to do that, but hasn't been an elimination of that being a thing either, which I think is telling.
So, and he's talked regularly about you get your playmakers on the field, mm-hmm. and Jordan Travis is one of their best offensive players.
He's their most proven playmaker at FSU right now, guy who's done at this level here.
But Jordan's clearly a kid that I feel like is very much at peace. Mm-hmm. I think he went through hell at Louisville. He doesn't talk a lot about that. That's private to him. Obviously, it hasn't been the easiest at FSU with being banged up some, the arm issues, not being healthy till Georgia Tech week last year,
for example. Didn't have a coaching staff that believed in him as a passer
previously. So it's not been an easy path to this moment, but I think he's in a pretty good place. Mm-hmm. And I think Milton, obviously, having a different kind of difficult path because of a catastrophic injury, I think those two kind of, they're two peas in a pod to a degree.
Well, they play almost, it's complementary, because Milton doesn't lack any confidence at all. He drips with swag.
Milton has a little Fortune 500 salesman going on with him in a good way.
Yeah.
He's very comfortable.
Like, very smart, very comfortable, very polished. Whereas Jordan, again, I think is more willing to be a little vulnerable and admit, like, hey, I get nervous sometimes or I need some help with things, which... Those can play off of each other well, especially if Jordan's willing to learn and listen from McKenzie of those strengths, and it seems like he is. I think that was the most interesting thing of today with those two and their dynamic. Jordan basically said he was nervous when McKenzie first came in here, and we had heard that, too, that Jordan was a little...
But he did reach out to him immediately.
Jordan
reached out to McKenzie.
The moment of self-doubt of, like, why are they bringing someone in here? Didn't I do well enough?
Yeah,
which is natural. That's a very, and for someone to admit, I thought was cool. But on the other side, McKenzie was vulnerable enough to say, coming here I was a little apprehensive because there was someone here. He's like, and I'd been in that spot when I was a freshman competing with someone who I think it was Justin Holman, UCF, go Knights. What, huh?
Don't say national champions, I'll punch you. We are in the same room.
But McKenzie had said he had some apprehension about coming here because of what that dynamic was going to be, and they both seem very, like you said, Chris, at peace with one another and the way things are kind of unfolding right now.
And I think that's a good thing for FSU.
All right, McKenzie Milton, big news of the day to me. He says he's 100%. He'd previously been pretty forthcoming and transparent, saying, I'm not 100%. He said, like, 90 back in January. I thought that was cool. I think that's
good. To add to that point, he said during these player run practices, summer workouts and such, he hasn't had to peel back after a hard day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that was obviously a concern because he's going through the most physical activity he has since, what, November 18? Is that when was the injury? November 18? It was
right around Thanksgiving,
Of 18, 20, right?
2018, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, this is a guy that his 15 spring practices was the most football he's gone through in 2+ years. And everything he's done to this point. But he's playing with house money. I mean, he's had great college experiences. He's clearly set up for whatever's next in life, whether that's keep playing football, going to coaching, going to business. He's comfortable with whatever it is. He does want to be a coach at some point in his life. And he's a guy that's taken mental notes mm-hmm. at every stop, with working with different guys, dealing with different people. And that's clear with him. But, yeah, he's a piece of the fabric of the team. We need to get better 1% every day. You know, we're just working at it. It is what it is. I asked multiple guys, including Coach Norvell and the players, about, you know, basically tons of new faces. A lot of freshmen, redshirt freshmen, who had completely screwed up first year, and transfers between last year and this year. How do you gel? How does it come together? And it's just a daily process. You keep working with each other. Someone like Andrew Parchment gets thrown in May. You get him out there and player runs practices. You throw to him. You create a timing and a rhythm and a comfort level. And then when you start putting on pads and getting out there and practice, you hope some of it transitions, but at least maybe you're a little bit ahead of where you would have been if you hadn't done that. And that's just where they are. It's a workman mentality is what came away from the players, is that they know there's a lot of work to be done. There's, you know, they're coming off a 3-win season and a miserable year of disruption and uniqueness. And it's about on to next year. I didn't feel like today was too reflective on last year outside of the normal. I felt like it was very much, how do we go from here? We're at a baseline now,
mm-hmm.
some stability. How do we build upon this? What do we do? You know, Coach Mike Norvell.
You got
me all shook. He reiterated a point that he's made before. They'll look at transfers, but they don't want to be a transfer school.
Right.
What they've done in the last, especially this last cycle and a bit in the prior one, was flipping the roster. Now they want to build that roster with the right guys, the right chemistry, and what helps them build a team. And we're seeing that with 22 recruiting, and even to a slight degree with 23 and a little bit of 24 already. That it looks likely they're not going to be a transfer-heavy team. Now, do they still look at transfers? Hell yeah, I think they will. Mm-hmm. I think everybody will. I think that's a new norm. But they're not going to have, what, 15 of our top 40 players are transfers. I don't think that continues.
Yeah, and 10 just this cycle alone.
Yeah.
I did some math earlier today, Chris. You might appreciate this. 62% of the roster, and it'll be, of the scholarship portion of the roster, was not here when Mike Norvell first arrived.
Yeah, it's been flipped. Now, it's not super talented. I think you'll agree with that. If you looked at my preseason 8 All-SEC team.
Oh, where do you have them?
Have you hit submit button yet,
by the way? I did today. Where do you have FSU finishing?
I picked them to finish 4th in the Atlantic. I think they're 4th or 5th, more likely than 4th or 3rd. I picked them to be ahead of, what, Syracuse, Louisville, and Wake. I think they can beat all three of those. I don't feel as confident about NC State, but who knows? NC State's usually kind of a weird game with them. And BC, who I actually am a little bullish on BC. I think BC can be a pretty damn good offense. And then, obviously, Clemson at
the
top.
I went the same as you, except for I think I flipped BC and Wake, and I like what Wake brings back. But, yeah. Real quick, so you mentioned Norvell talking about the future, not reflecting on last year. And that was very true. The one thing, and this was a talking point for him, clearly, because he mentioned it multiple times in multiple areas. He mentioned the word trust when he was asked about last season. He'd be asked about what last season's challenges were and whatnot, and he talked about that being as an opportunity to build trust. To me, man, that's very much so a focal point of the guys who stayed, the ones who, because so many guys left.
Jordan Travis reiterated that point. He talked about, one, they're sick of losing. Like, it's no fun. He's like, the feeling after UNC last year, he was like, Jordan Travis was like, how great that felt. He's like, I don't know if I've ever felt a feeling like that. He's like, that was great. He goes, the issue, though, is we got kind of, not everybody, but some got kind of relaxed in the idea of a loss is a loss, just mm-hmm. whatever. They don't want to be that anymore going forward. And I don't want to, you know, summarize this poorly, so I'm going to walk lightly on it. I'll send you the quote, and you might even be able to use it in your story tomorrow on Jordan. But he talked very much about how, like, they have to, as a group, believe in it. And that he believes that they do believe in the vision a great deal more than they did 12 months ago, for sure. And even as the season was going on last year, it's clear to say everybody knows the storyline's played out. Nothing about last year, with the offseason largely being wiped out by a pandemic, allowed for kind of a identity of that team to be formed in a good manner. You can't form an identity over Zoom like you can in person, where in person you can get happy with each other, you can get ticked off at each other, you can yell at each other, you can praise each other. You live, you learn, you build. It's so much different in person than it ever could be on Zoom. Mm-hmm. Zoom is a teaching tool, but it's not all those other things.
It doesn't make up for the hands-on experience. And what Norvell was talking about with trust, like that equity that comes with working in person and being able to yell at someone and then see their response, and that doesn't get built up instantly. That takes time, and they didn't have that last year. Yeah, and guys left. And I think that's, if you're trying to be optimistic about the short term and thus the long term of this program, that's where I think it lies, right? Is that guys now trust the coach, and that maybe does enough to make up for the deficiencies in talent on this roster.
Yeah, he said he was grateful for last year because they had their good moments, the UNC game being kind of the one that they all focused on. But the bad moments and how they responded showed a lot about who and what they were, good and bad. And you need that. You got to learn from that. But they learned about it together as a group, and it was new to all of them last year. He was a new coach here. That roster was his new roster. A lot of new players last year, and God knows there's a lot of new players now. So, I think, you know, we regularly say on the podcast how much we think he's organized and that he and his staff do a good job of kind of thinking about now and next, and doing a good job of that. I think his comments today kind of leaned on that, of they understood who and what they were last year when they reviewed that, who and what they are right now, and who and what they hope to be when December rolls around and, you know, they've wrapped up a season that's going to have some turbulence without a shadow of a doubt, but where they hope to be at that point compared to today.
Anything else on today, Mike Norvell, before we transition to recruiting real quick?
No, I mean, he was asked about college football playoff expansion. He kind of gave a generic type. Name, image, likeness was a popular topic, especially with Mackenzie Milton. Mackenzie's very comfortable in that realm. Dreamfield is something he's big on. Mm-hmm. Likes working with Derek King on it. The two of them trust each other. You know, they probably won't talk much of the week of the game, but in general, they talk pretty regular, he said. Again, I thought Jermaine was really impressive today. If you get a chance to go watch the videos of him talking, whether it's on the stage or to break out with us early, well worth it to check out, especially that early one this morning. And I thought Jordan Travis was great because sometimes when you get comfortable being uncomfortable, it says a lot about you. And I think that speaks to Jordan Travis. He did a really, really good job. Jordan Travis, when we spoke to him at IMG a couple years ago, I believe it was, versus Jordan Travis today, come a hell of a long way.
I got something that we need to talk about real quick. Vaccinations and the ACC protocol for testing this upcoming season. A lot of people on the message board have asked about it. I know it's polarizing, but I do want us to talk about it real quick.
And along that subject is also protocols, cancellations, rescheduling, all that. So have at it. Get the ball rolling, baby.
Okay. Jim Phillips spoke on Wednesday. All right, well, days are difficult of the week right now still for me. But he spoke on Wednesday morning. And there was nothing official yet. Now, the SEC had come out a few days before and talked about their protocol with testing and cancellation.
The Big 12.
Yep, and for the SEC, it was 85% team need to be vaccinated to basically be out of the testing protocol consistently. So he spoke about with the ACC and said that wasn't yet quite set in stone. But we believe that 85% is going to be the threshold for the protocol, right?
Yeah, I think that's the expectation for the A5, the Big 5 conferences
It'll be everyone having to kind of be in that regard. Mike Norvell was asked about where the team was with it, as expected, did not give out a direct answer of saying, you know, we're at 75% or whatever. He said, we're getting closer. We're still talking about it. Mackenzie Milton said it's very much a personal choice. So I got the feeling, Chris, that they're probably not quite there yet. And what does that mean implication-wise moving forward?
I believe Jim Phillips said that seven of the institutions in the league were at or near the threshold, like extremely close. Now, some of that is there's some private schools in the league that I believe the school as a whole is requiring. And obviously some of those Northeastern schools, I think it's going to be fairly common. I think Virginia, for example, has a policy of you have to get it, barring religion of certain types, certain other outs. But so FSU's obviously, I don't expect them to have that policy, you know, State University in Florida, everything we're considering. that's not going to come about. So it's a personal choice. FSU did have Myron Moore speak to the guys in recent days to speak on the subject. They're clearly trying to educate the players and allow them to make a personal decision. Ultimately, though, Jim Phillips' comment, and he spoke a good bit about it, and he revisited it a couple times in the Q&A session. They're going to allow the medical advisory group of the league to set some guardrails on this, but they're not in a rush, one, because of the variant. They want to see how that impacts things with things flaring back up a bit here, nationally speaking. They want to see that. They don't want to rush into a policy and then kind of retreat from the policy immediately. So I think we probably see the policy sometime in August is my expectation. I would say in the next 2 weeks is probably a reasonable expectation, maybe 3 weeks. Once that policy is set, the league is going to have guardrails to this. I presume they'll put a threshold on it. Teams will need to get there. Getting there gets you out of testing protocol. It basically makes it where it's going to be incredibly difficult for your team to have a game postponed or canceled. That's the goal. In the end, let's all be honest, we want to play the games. Last year stunk when FSU had to cancel games, or games were canceled because of circumstances or postponements for FSU and for everybody else in the country who dealt with that, which was a hell of a long list.
Dabo was the only one who had to deal with it. He was impacted more than everyone. Dr. Dab, sorry, I couldn't help myself.
So you want to get to that point. It's needed. You know, you would think the ACC would take a look at the NC State situation with the College World Series, however you feel about how that was thought about. The fact that they were pulled from the potential of winning a national title because of the situation, you want to avoid that situation.
And the FSU players were keenly aware of that happening, too. Right. I will say that today. They did all...
So I think there will be a push. I think there will be a goal. There's obviously going to be some who opt not to do it, and that's a personal choice. And I ain't here to judge nobody about that. It's personal. But it is going to be essential that FSU, as well as everybody else in the league, gets near or at that threshold. Because the closer you are to that number, the more likely that you're not going to fall into something on written on paper that says you can't play. And that's what you want to avoid. They're going to set a policy. What you can do to circumvent or get around that policy is where you want to get. And FSU is one of many schools that aren't there. I didn't listen to every coach over the 2 days. Numerous ones were asked about, a lot of them on the big stage. You know, Dorn was asked at NC State. His answer was kind of pretty open-ended, which I found a little surprising because of the NC State situation. But again, you're thinking about the school you're dealing with, the population you're dealing with, what it is. It is what it is. I think Virginia, for example, with Barack Mendenhall, he spoke about school policy, so it's kind of out of his hand, but obviously allows them to get to the threshold. I'm sure there's other schools that fall into that same category. So you have kind of those two extremes in FSU's there. But, yeah, I mean, that's a popular topic right now. We'll see if it still is when September rolls around. I think some of the reason that's popular is because of the national flare-up in numbers over the last couple weeks.
I'm part of that number.
I know you are.
COVID. You're in a hotel room
COVID
with me.
Cowboy.
Yeehaw! Okay, real quick before we go to a commercial break, then recruiting, I want you to give a scale of 1 to 10 my freak out this morning. Where was it at in my pantheon of freak out?
You talking about YouTube hating on you?
Yeah, basically.
It wasn't that bad. You just were clearly frustrated. But I don't understand massive media events with crappy internet.
It is a little confusing, and it seems to happen every time
it's
we come
sort
here.
Sort of an ACC tradition.
It's better than Pinehurst a few years ago in that year that Jimbo was getting bullets and I was trying to put stuff up there and there was literally no internet. I just feel like I have to retreat to my room every year to try to get competent internet. It took me 3 hours to upload McKinsey Milton video today.
I had no issues. Might be user error.
Must be not. We'll take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, welcome back to On the Bench. We're going to wrap up this episode here with a positive commitment from three-star quarterback in high-end three-star quarterback. I don't want the Stargazers to get upset.
He's 2023. Let's not get carried away with stars.
2023 quarterback Chris Parson out of Brentwood, Tennessee, close to our home office for 24/7 Sports, commits to the Seminoles. Christopher, give us a quick breakdown on this commitment and how it unfolded.
Chris Parson visited in June. He had been a longtime FSU fan. He actually camped with FSU when Walt Bell was OC, to give you a reference of time there. FSU offered, I don't remember the exact date off the top of my head, but relatively in the same realm of when he visited. Once they offered, it was huge. He's a kid that likes FSU a great deal. FSU likes him. He has a good relationship with Kenny Dillingham and some others. He came to FSU, visited, loved it, put out a top eight not long after, put out the announcement date of today when he put out that top eight. It was always going to be FSU. There wasn't a whole lot of deliberation, from what I understand, from the point of the visit to the top eight to the announcement. It was kind of consistent. Real solid 2-minute commitment video. Mm-hmm. Did a good job. Some of those get carried away. I didn't think his was. I thought it was solid. Talented kid. Gets it down the field. His height is interesting.
He's listed at 6'190", which is obviously on the small side right now.
Yeah, I want to see how he grows. But at the same time, the whole height thing's becoming kind of a, do we worry about it as much with quarterbacks these days as we did 10 years ago?
Depending on the way you play, I think that mitigates it some. And the way he plays specifically does cut that out some.
So you did the scouting report. When you watched the film, what's the first thing that stood out to you?
Really dynamic, just in every phase of the game, Chris. Like he can stay in the pocket and push the ball downfield and be accurate, which is obviously priority number one, right? But then he moves in the pocket really well, or escapes the pocket, keeps his eyes downfield, and throws on the run really well, which very important in today's game. Patrick Mahomes has kind of made that, and Aaron Rodgers was doing that before Patrick Mahomes. He just takes it to the next level, but that's like what the prototype is becoming. And Chris Parson does some of that at a pretty high level. But then he's really athletic too, and runs really well as a designed runner, very athletic and breaks tackles. You're giving me a lot of eye contact. It's making me uncomfortable.
I'm just thinking in my head, I'm looking forward to the review that just says, I loved when Sinone said that our new quarterback commitment was a Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers combination. I'm looking forward to it. Josh is going to read it on air.
As I was saying, I thought I escaped putting that out there, but I guess clearly not enough. He just does a lot of things well. I think I called him a triple threat, which I was pretty proud of. Everyone talks about dual threat quarterbacks, but there is now an element of you have to be good throwing on the run as well, and he does that in addition to scrambling, running, design runs, and staying in the pocket. And he's good at everything.
That's a class where, as of now, we expect him probably take two in it, barring a change with the 22 group. They have Duffy and 22 at this point. So, if that's your first guy, you're in a pretty good spot.
And Josh mentioned, I'm trying to figure out, who did he mention today on the message board? You can check out on Knowles 24/7. This is why you sign up for VIP. We have a special deal going on right now.
23 quarterbacks?
Yeah, he mentioned Dante Moore from Detroit.
Yeah, Dante Moore from Michigan is one they love. The young man from Kansas, Avery.
He's super athletic. I'm trying. He camped here.
He camped in June.
Kind of looks like a surfer dude.
Yeah. The tall kid from Iowa, Jacob, is another one that they liked in June when he came in. They've got a good amount of options in 23, but yeah, I think the board starts there in Michigan.
And I think they start going big game hunting because they feel good about what they have currently. That allows you to be a little more aggressive and, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess picky, choosy, selective.
If you dwindle the board down and make a dude realize he's the only other one you want, sometimes that pays dividends in the end. Mm-hmm. The kid in Kansas is really, really talented. He's a three-sport athlete. No, obviously keep an eye on him to see how he progresses, because as we all know, when you're a 16, 17-year-old quarterback, you develop.
All right, so we like the take of Chris Parson. It gives him some flexibility for what they're doing. And I keep wanting to say Chris Parsons. It's Chris Parson.
No S.
I think when you start getting older, you start putting S's at the end of names that there shouldn't be S's, and vice versa, subtracting S's. COVID brain. All right, the last thing we want to talk about real quick before we get out of here is on July 25th. That's on this upcoming Sunday. FSU has a big recruiting weekend, the only big recruiting weekend of July per the NCAA calendar. Chris, real quick, want to give an update and tell people where they can go to check out a full list of names that we have?
Well, Zach's put together a great list on the site, done an excellent job of collecting those names, confirming them, making sure those are guys that are truly expected in. You can find it on the message board. We'll also move it back up to the front page once the ACC kickoff stuff subsides a little bit. Obviously, today's been a very busy day with a commitment and the four people speaking here in Charlotte. The event itself, kind of similar to what FSU did early in June to some degree, kind of that elite night, mixing it, I think, like a barbecue. they're trying to get some top-tier targets in here, whether it's 22, 23, or even 24. Spend a little time with them, get them on campus. This will be kind of the last chance they have with a lot of recruits until the season itself actually rolls around, because things shut down once again in August. So it will be a good group. It won't be as great of a group as we saw some in June. I think that will be a national trend in July, because obviously a lot of young men in their high school football squads are starting up here, preparing for preseason and such, and some of those high school coaches don't really want their guys to run around doing a bunch of stuff.
Right. All right. So it'll be a good group, but just not quite as maybe elite as before. But you already just said that. I just reiterated it in a slightly different way.
Drive the point home.
Woo! Real quick, a commitment that may be on the radar. I mean, someone is committing. It might be to FSU. We have crystal balls right now. In fact, I just put in a show crystal ball.
Oh, look at you. For Daughtry Richardson, talented offensive lineman from Miami Central. Also used to be at Tallahassee, Florida. Godby has ties to the Tallahassee area, still has family up there. He officially visited FSU as well as others in June. That's been a battle consistently, basically, between FSU and Miami. Here in recent weeks, Kentucky kind of became a talk about. And I think there was some legitimate legs to Kentucky being a contender. I don't think that was something completely out of left field by any stretch, based on the feedback we got and talking to some people about it. At the end of the day, though, we still think Richardson's going to end up at FSU. Felt pretty good about that when June came to a close. Still feel pretty good about that here a few days out from the announcement.
All right, so you can keep an eye on that. I don't think we're going to have a podcast before then. Chris is about to be wheels up to
Las Vegas.
Vegas, baby, Vegas. So he'll be out of pocket for about a week. I will be going to my own bachelor party. Not my own, but a bachelor party.
You get married again? Does Ashley know?
Breaking news, babe. And her mom sometimes listens to the podcast, too. Which
That's going to be a heck of a conversation.
Sorry, Sandy. We'll be busy this weekend, but Zach and Joshua will be boots on ground in Tallahassee on Sunday for the camp. We'll have an update, obviously, if Dr. Richardson does commit to FSU, which we are currently expecting at the time of recording this podcast. But for now, we'll probably do a recap on Monday or Tuesday of everything going on without Christopher, because he'll be hopefully drunk, intoxicated somewhere.
I think Monday we're going to see a big piece of cement, the Hoover Dam. I think we're also going to see the Grand Canyon.
I'd rather see the Grand Canyon than the Hoover
Dam. I've seen the dam before. It didn't do much for me. But people I'm with haven't seen it, so.
Who gives a damn?
Yeah. Canyon's awesome, though. I'm looking forward to Grand Canyon. Might also see, I think the Joshua Tree Forest is out there. I think we might go by that.
I gotta smoke some peyote or whatever they do with peyote. Go out to Joshua Tree.
The episode of The Sopranos.
Spoiler alert. All right, for Chris Nee, I'm Brendan Sinone. Chris, how many stars should they give us?
At least four.
No. 5-star reviews. Nothing less.
We only read them if they're 5, right, Josh?
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.